This is the Muscles and Management Podcast, where we build your body and your business. Talking all things training, sports performance, and business for athletes and aspiring coaches to enhance your training and better your career. Muscles and Management is brought to you by Challenger Strength with your host, Jerry DiFilippo.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 115 of the Muscles and Management Podcast. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe if you haven't already. I greatly appreciate it. I hope you guys enjoyed this week's Meathead Monday. A little bit of a Q&A. Like I said on the episode, I'm going to continue to do Q&As for these. I think that's a good interactive way to kind of keep you guys engaged and to keep me engaged with you as well. Give me feedback on what you think on that, but I think that's what I want to do going forward. Very excited for this week's guest, Mike Whiteman. You may know Mike. Actually, I'm going to pull him up on Twitter here. I always get his at wrong on Twitter. I want to make sure I got it right. Let's see. Hound. All right. Hound at Hound Speed. So Mike is basically the head of speed and strength training for the Pittsburgh Riverhounds and the Pittsburgh Riverhounds Developmental Academy. So basically, you're going to see a lot of really good stuff from him. What I like about what he does is it's high level stuff, but it's done over done in a way where large amounts of athletes are getting really good work in. And I think one of the biggest things in our field is, you know, can you train athletes, but like, can you do things in a team setting with a lot of athletes if you're working in that setting? I think that separates the good coaches from the average coaches, or the great good coaches from the great coaches. And Mike does a really good job of implementing high level stuff with a lot of athletes. And we get a little bit into how he does that. We get into the basics of speed training, acceleration, top speed, his beliefs on a lot of that type of stuff. You know, if you don't follow him, go follow him right now at Hound Speed. Just really good content on a daily basis on his page. You know, just very excited. I was very excited to have him on. Great conversation that we had. And I think it's something that a lot of people, a lot of you that are listening are going to learn from. And he's just a really smart guy. And I'm excited to have you guys, you know, get a inside look on his philosophies and what he's doing. So before we get into that, and just so before I ramble too much, I'm going to turn over to Julian for this week's nutrition tip. And we'll be back with this episode with Mike.
What is going on, everybody? Coach Julian with another nutrition tip of the day. And this one here is my recommendation for the best supplement or drug for improving performance, recovery, and cognitive function. And guess what? It's not something that you can take. It's actually getting 7 to 9 hours of sleep per night. You know, a good night's rest can really do wonders for a multitude of reasons. Three reasons in particular, you know, from a psychological standpoint, as an athlete, you know, improving our psychological components like our reaction time, learning and our memory, and the motivation it takes to get out there and actually perform at a high level. Those are three main areas right there from a psychological standpoint that, you know, getting a good amount of sleep can very, very well impact. So getting your good amount of sleep is going to be crucial there. Next, you know, from a physiological standpoint, hormone release. If we get a good amount of sleep, it's going to affect our ability to regulate our hormones, getting that deep REM sleep, that rapid eye movement. That's where a lot of our growth hormone is going to be released and cortisol is going to be regulated. Growth hormone, obviously, is sometimes also known as HGH, is an important part of the body's endocrine system. So it's essential for muscle repair, muscle building, bone growth, and promoting the oxidation of fats. So, you know, getting a good amount of sleep is going to be crucial from an athletic career standpoint in terms of regulating those hormones. And, you know, cortisol is obviously known as, you know, our stress hormone, regulates in deep sleep. So obviously, when we don't get enough sleep, cortisol goes through the roof. Our stress levels are increased, and it's going to affect a lot of the things going on in our body. And then lastly, from a physical standpoint, obviously, when we don't get enough sleep, the risk of injury is extremely high. And, you know, a study done by, I believe his name was Milowski et al. In 2014, you know, they found that those adolescent athletes who got less than 8 hours of sleep compared to those who had gotten at least 8 hours or more were 1.7 times more likely to experience injuries. So obviously, sleep can really affect us from an injury risk standpoint, and as well as illness susceptibility. Those who slept less than 7 hours were 3 times more likely to develop a cold or get some type of cold-related virus. So especially now during these tough times during the pandemic, where obviously we're going around with the coronavirus, you know, it's extremely important that we get our sleep, because obviously if we don't get enough sleep, we're more susceptible to these things. So right then and there, guys, that's going to be my little tidbit for today, giving you guys the biggest leg up in competition, life, and performance in general. Sleep. Get your sleep, guys. Now, back to Jerry with this episode of Muscles and Management.
All right, Jules, thanks again for another great tip. Before I drag this out too long, as I tend to do, I don't want to keep you guys waiting too long. So enjoy this episode with Mike. I'll turn it over to the episode, and I will talk to you guys next time. Peace. All right, everyone. Excited to welcome on Mike Whiteman. Mike, thanks so much for your time. I'm so thrilled to have you. And I'll give the listeners a little bit of insight as we get going. But Mike's been very patient and a trooper in terms of scheduling this with me. So thank you for taking the time. And I've been really looking forward to having you on. So thanks again.
Well, thank you for having me, Jerry. I've been looking forward to this, and I'm glad that we finally can connect here. So,
yeah, for sure. Through the power outages, just our crazy schedules and confusion and this and that, and we finally made it work. So right. I'm really excited to talk some shop and see what we come up with.
Right, just part and parcel for 2020, right?
Yeah, I guess it makes sense for the theme of things and what's going on. So, I get, how have things been for you? It's been crazy for everybody, I'm sure, but what's it been like with what you do? And I guess this will give you a little bit of a chance to really get into exactly what it is you do and everything that goes into that.
So to be honest, it's actually made my life a little bit more busy, just because, you know, I am the strength conditioning coach for the Riverhounds Development Academy, and I work with so many youth athletes outside of the scholastic system. And we obviously know that, you know, nationally, even globally, we'll say that right now there's so much up in the air in regards to what we don't know about, you know, what we want our, you know, student athletes to do as they return back to school. Are they going to play? Are they not going to have fall sports with us? As long as we, you know, because we're essentially like a private enterprise, as long as we are operating within, you know, the guidelines of our state here in Pennsylvania, you know, which we are, we're having our kids, you know, come in and train, and we're doing temperature checks, and we have sanitation stations, and you know, they have a COVID questionnaire every single time they show up. So we're really crossing our T's and dotting our I's. We've had the kids come in and train as responsibly as possible. So, you know, because they don't have other outlets, they've actually been relying on the Riverhounds more. So we've kind of geared it up, so to speak. So it's been really good, and it's actually, the kids are for the first time, you know, really fresh. So they're performing really well on my end, because I'm always at a little bit at odds when they're, you know, at a, you know, 12 month year round competing type schedule, and, you know, enhancing performance and kind of mitigating injury and all that kind of good stuff. You know, you're kind of always just that delicate balancing act. But now it's just been, they can't compete. So it's, you know, the first time, you know, I have, you know, something very consistent, and they're doing extraordinarily well.
Yeah, it's been just a whirlwind for everybody. And it is funny, though, that like there are certain people, certain coaches, certain businesses that are busier now than they were, you know, before this all started. And I could even say personally, like the structure of what I do and everything, like being a smaller facility and being more private based training, like that was the first thing that was really allowed to happen around here in terms of gyms. Like all the big health clubs and big places aren't open. But I really do only appointment only stuff. So I've been able to get some stuff done. And a lot of the athletes, like you mentioned, you know, you guys are the only outlet for them, to the kids that you work with you know, the only place they can really go to do stuff. I'm seeing a lot of that as well with canceled seasons, colleges being delayed, all this type of stuff. Like, they still need to train, and like, they can actually still come to me versus all the other stuff they can't do. So I've been busy. I've been busier as well. It's been interesting.
Right, right. But I'm truly blessed with that too. I mean, we, you know, we love what we do. I think I can speak for you on that as well too. So, you know, there is that trepidation and that fear, you know, given ever. I mean, you have doctors and lawyers being furloughed, and you start to think like, well, you know, we're strength and conditioning coaches. You know, there is that initial, like, when it first hits, okay, well, what does this really mean? And then, you know, you kind of find out you're truly blessed, really, in the end there. So just happy to still, you know, be able to assist and do what I do.
Yeah, it was definitely something stressful, I think, for everybody to just, you know, not know, and the uncertainty and all that type of stuff. And, you know, I think it's been cool to see our industry, like, early on, like, in those first couple months, or like that first month, really, like that first, I remember getting home March 16th was like the day I closed. And like it honestly seems kind of like a dream when you look back at it, just how weird it was, the whole process. Right. But like, doing the, like, I remember getting home and like taking every single ad that I had, like writing their name up on a board, and knowing like, oh, I get to send this thing out to this person, this program out to this person, and getting on a schedule. And it was like filming exercises at home. And like for 2 months, that was like the way it was. And that was the way things were done. And And it's pretty crazy now. Like, it feels so long ago now that things have been kind of picking up a little bit, but it really wasn't. And it's just like, I think it was cool to see our industry, the coaches, be creative and what it really created. I think it did open up a lot of new avenues for a lot of people, just in terms of what they could offer, you know?
Yeah. It truly, you know, was a challenge. It forced us as a community to be resourceful. And to your point, you know, with the Riverhounds Academy, you know, I was doing Instagram live videos and I was exploring that for the first time. And we had our technical trainers, you know, ex-professional guys, you know, in the garage, you know, doing foot skills with the kids as well too. So it actually, you know, in a unique way, because I always like a challenge, it forced us to expand our capabilities. And it kind of, if nothing else, you know, it kind of shed some light on, you know, perhaps what is next, you know. So
yeah, I think some people, honestly, even in the private sector, came out of this with like different things that they got ideas for with their businesses. And that it was really cool to kind of just see who was creative and who thought of things to do. And people like you, like, how did they stay in contact with a large group of athletes, like all these college or team strength coaches? Like, how did they really manage all the athletes that they had if they weren't able to get in person with them, and, you know, see what kind of came from this? And I think our profession as a whole did a good job of turning it into a positive and, you know, letting it kind of open up new horizons for us going forward.
Right. No, and I have to give a lot of credit to our academy director, Scott Gibson. He emailed the parents daily, and to the point where it may have, at some point might have, you know, bothered some, like, oh, here's more email. But you know, it was we chose to be, you know, overly communicative, you know, to make sure that we were keeping everyone in the loop and we kept everyone involved to the best of our ability. So he did a fantastic job with that.
Yeah, that's super important. All right. So I want to touch on a little bit of like kind of how you got to where you are and how you landed with the Riverhounds and what that journey's been like. And then obviously I want to get right into a lot of the programming / mechanical components of like a lot of the speed stuff we're going to talk about. But just to kind of give us a little bit of a background before we get into that, like, how did you get to this position? How long have you been doing it? And what was that journey kind of like for you?
I have been with the Riverhounds Academy now since 2007, and I'm one of the few OGs at this point. So, you know, a lot of guys have, you know, come and gone since then, and one of the originals still. And it's kind of, you know, neat to see this monstrosity kind of, you know, rise from just a dream to, you know, a stadium on the Mon, and you know, a very, you know, we were the number one seed. Our professional team was the number one seed in the USL Championship Division in the East last year. And it was just a dream by, you know, Jason Cutney and a couple of us, you know, years and years ago. But, you know, prior to that, I was a soccer player in the Western Pennsylvania area, and I grew up. I played collegiately at now Division II college. At the time, it was actually NAIA. And, you know, in college, I just fell in love, honestly, with the process more than the game. And I think a lot of strength and conditioning coaches probably could say that, you know. So I don't think that's necessarily unique. I just fell in love with the gym, you know. Yeah. And I've always contended that, you know, some guys work on their cars, some guys work on their body. But it wasn't like a bodybuilding type thing. It was more a performance thing. Like, how do you run faster, jump higher, get stronger, you know, in the most efficient way sort of possible. And, you know, kind of fell in love with that and went, you know, graduated with a degree in biology. The initial ambition was to be an orthopedic surgeon and hopefully fix broken athletes. the MCATs and all that kind of stuff actually graduated summa cum laude. So I had good grades, did very average on my MCATs. And had just a couple interviews granted. And the schools that granted me interviews wasn't quite feeling. So you're kind of left with that early midlife crisis at like 18, right? You're like, oh, I don't really, you know, and you're like, okay, now what? So fast forward, I wound up actually, you know, getting into training. You know, one of my good friends gives me an opportunity at his local gym. I started training soccer moms. And before we know it, we actually have one of those, you know, like franchises, D1, opens up one of their franchises in the Pittsburgh area. And I wound up actually becoming the head coach for D1 Pittsburgh. And that's actually one of the, you know, the first things that allowed me to kind of, you know, really see training at a high level. I was introduced to Kurt Hester because he was the national director at the time. It was hot off of, you know, him training Tim Tebow and all that kind of stuff. And, you know,
I didn't know he trained Tim Tebow. That's pretty cool.
No, yeah.
I'm not surprised. Uncle Kurt's probably been around the block and back like 15 times.
Yeah, right. So he was the national director at the time when I was kind of taking over and at the Pittsburgh facility. And it was cool because I got the, you know, although I am like, you know, a soccer guy, you know, I give my kids a steady diet of just, you know, GPP, you know, general physical preparedness. And that's where they've been successful. I just kind of supplement, fill in the cracks, you know, where.
Yeah.
You know,
and we're going to talk about that too. I think people sure. try to overdo right. that. And it's like,
yeah, I don't want to skip ahead there, but, I was training football guys. And then I spent the whole summer training Terrell Pryor. And
really?
Then, you're right. Right. Yeah. And then I went down and got to help run, you know, Manning Passing Academy too, and Thibodeau with, you know, Peyton and Eli and Archie and down there having. So I did get to work with some big time, you know, like football guys at that point. And that was quite the scene. And I tell you what, Thibodeau, Louisiana, in the middle of the summer, that is no joke. You want to talk about humidity? My goodness. I just remember being down there and just, you know, spontaneous storms. And it was the most oppressive sort of heat and sensation I've ever felt for about 48 hours. But it was a great time. And then I guess I proved my worth to the Riverhounds. And they saw that, you know, people kind of latched on. And they were like, you know what? The owner at the time, Jason Cutney, who's now the director of the Boise CNL, the league in which we compete, our youth academy, he's like, you know, we have to hire Mike. You know, we have to hire him full time. And the rest is sort of history.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty cool to hear how diverse of a journey it was for you and the amount of different types of athletes you worked with. And I really think the coolest thing about it is like, okay, I'm known as a quote unquote soccer guy. Like you're like, oh, I was a soccer guy, but I worked with football players. It was like, yeah, but if you're a good strength coach and a good speed coach, you're a good strength coach and you're a good speed coach, right? Like
correct,
you could, right, you absolutely. Could be working, you could be working with like, you know, a badminton team. You're a good strength coach and a good speed coach. Like,
right.
you can work. And I had a tweet about this a week or two ago, basically saying, like, stop looking for the blank specific strength coach and look for the a good strength coach. Right. And it was it's just like, how much time do we waste either as, you know, a profession, or you see parents and athletes look for the wrong things within a coach because they're so focused on the sport when they don't realize like 90%, 85% of what we do is very general, is very broad. It would help, like, you could make a program that if I said, okay, give me a program that's going to make an athlete stronger and faster, and you put it together, it would help athletes in every sport unless they were like, unless they were like super, super, super advanced and with a high training age and really needed to buckle down on some specifics. But even then, it would help them a good amount.
Right. Absolutely. 100% spot on. Hit the nail right on the head there, Derry, for sure.
Yeah. And it's like, why? Oh, my son or daughter needs to train with soccer players because they play soccer. Or he needs to train with baseball players because they play baseball. It's like, no, like, I can train a baseball player in the same group as a football player, maybe tweak a couple things here and there if they need certain things changed, and they're going to be just as good as if they trained with a room full of baseball players, minus maybe, like, the camaraderie of talking about the sport they play.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why, personally, you know, educating the parents is so important. You know, anytime I get the opportunity to, you know, get their ear, I'm making sure that I'm, you know, again, like, I like to communicate.
Telling them these things. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Even if it just, you know, it's simply as possible, you know, I just try to give them data, right? Because, you know, they don't, you know, eccentric, isometric, well, you know, that's, you know, obviously that jargon's over. They don't care. Is my kid getting stronger, faster, fitter, right? That's all they really care about. But they like to hear numbers. Like, that's the one thing I've come to realize is they like to see cold hard data. So, like, hey, like, verticals up and, you know, fly 10 miles per hour up. Yeah, you know what I mean? Everyone's like, all right, you know, like, yeah. So, you know, that translates well. And, oh, by the way, that, like you just said, essentially, that's good for any sport. It doesn't matter.
There's not one sport that won't help. Like, right. There's nothing that's not going to help with.
Right.
And you could make, and then I guess this is a really good example of that in terms of where the conversation is taking us, but you could make the argument, okay, at that point, like, would the vertical help the basketball player maybe even a little bit more than the other athletes because, like, jumping really high, or the volleyball player, whatever it is, jumping really high is specific to their sport in the sense of, like, it's an activity they're doing and they depend on, or right. Even like in soccer, like, oh, they got to get up for, to head a ball. Like, that's pretty important.
Yeah.
But, like, you look at certain sports where that direct vertical might be more important, but it doesn't mean that vertical doesn't help every single sport a lot as well. Maybe it's just like an 8 out of 10 in importance and not a 10
right.
out of 10.
Exactly. And it's just nuance and subtlety at that point, but it's, you know, very subtle, like, variations. That's it. Tweaks, not these monster, you know, paradigm type shifts.
Where it was like, you know, a lot of people, like, I know when I started working with hockey players right away, it was like, oh, like, hammer lateral movements, the way they skate. And, like, the more you train, the more you're like, I just gotta get these guys stronger and more powerful in their lower halves, and, like, have them sprint a lot, and, like,
yeah, and
make sure
and
they
I,
don't
and
hurt
not,
their groins, and we're good. Like,
and I think you've probably seen too, and not to, and I don't want to get, you know, maybe a little bit off topic, it's actually, you know, staying, you know, similar but not congruent is very helpful. So actually doing things that they typically don't do,
yeah,
is of greater benefit to them. So, for instance, like, we were just talking about, like, you know, more vertical type sports. So you would think, you know, volleyball, basketball, they go to that well so frequently, you know, leaping vertically, that I found that getting them strong and sprinting them, horizontal efforts, actually kind of unlocks them more than doing what seems apparent, right? And then vice versa, just because I think there's, you know, too much, you know, like, sensory overload, you know, like, you essentially have plateaued in this one area, but we can still work, you know, the force velocity curve in the areas that we need to, and get those attributes. We got to just do it in a different way, because the different is good for you at this point. So,
yeah, I want to, again, you just said you didn't want to go off topic, and I don't want to go back to something we just talked about already. But listen, it's a show full of tangents, so it happens.
Right, I like it.
So one thing you mentioned that I think is really important to make note of for a lot of the coaches that I have listening, don't get frustrated. It's hard not to, believe me, I get frustrated, but like, try not to get frustrated with some of the ridiculous, what you think are ridiculous questions you might get from parents or athletes. Like, if they're not informed, it's not their fault. Like, right. you gotta answer them in a way that gives them the knowledge to eventually know the thing. Like, I love when an athlete that I've had for a couple years can, like, sort out the BS that they see or know why they're doing what they're doing with me. Like, they start to get it. And I think that's such an important thing is, like, don't get angry when they don't get it if you haven't explained it to them, or don't get angry when they don't get it because they just don't get it yet.
Right. No, 100%. I believe that is more our job than anything. You know, if you pull back just the strength and conditioning curtain, I believe we're teachers all at the end of the day, right? So I want my kids to be able to function. If I've done my job, they will function at an extraordinarily high level without me being present. So when they walk into that gym someday at a school or wherever, or they're on vacation on their own, they'll know exactly what to do, and they'll know the reasoning behind it too. They'll have just a basic understanding of, all right, you know, today I want to do some, you know, rate of force development work. So I can't really go that heavy. I want to kind of go, like, you know, like 50-60%. I want to really get that weight moving fast, and I want to complex it with some jumps. Not overly, you know, complicated, but they, like, have a basic understanding of, okay, this is appropriate, you know, and they understand, you know, a basic loading type idea too, not doing, like, you know, like 10 sets of 20 and, like, you know, claiming it to be like power development, you know, like, no, you're a little off there.
Yeah. And that's a big thing too, I think, is just to understand, like, have them understand that and to, you know, make sure that you're not bogging them down with stuff they don't need to know, but giving them the idea of, like, okay, this is why this is important, this is why we're going to do this, and all that type of stuff. Speaking of which, getting into a little bit more of the nuts and bolts of the, you know, programming and mechanics side of things. If we were to look at, let's just say, opening speed up here as a topic,
right?
You know, looking at more of the basics and quote unquote essentials, let's just say, and we can start with acceleration. You know, you work, like you said, the developmental part of the academy, and right. I know that a lot of the young athletes you work with, like, that's a big part of why I was drawn to you on your social media, is just like, you know, there are a lot of foundational points to look for, but I am always impressed by a coach who has to get those things done with a lot of athletes. Like, it's really easy to cook one burger on the grill, and, like, you get it, you get to make sure you get to check it every minute and make sure that all the condiments are on the right way. But when you have to man a grill with 100 patties on it, it's like, oh, okay, like, I got to find a way to kind of streamline this a little bit and make it, you know, a little easier to apply because I have more things to look out over, more athletes to look out for. So in your mind, what are some essentials or things you are looking for when it comes to either youth or even more advanced athletes in acceleration?
So I try to, you know, think as globally as possible. You know, when I start with an athlete, or in this case, you know, just a large group of athletes. So, you know, it starts with just that, you know, high degree of self awareness. And, you know, if they can't hold positions first, like isometrically, right, then they're not going to be able to demonstrate them at any sort of speed. So, you know, we're looking at just basic posture, right? Can we maintain, you know, a good body line? So, you know, simple, you know, the basics of just simple planking, right? And then that's where I like, you know, introducing within that, you know, within those parameters, like a little bit of like contralateral type movement, like dead bugs, because they start to take on, you know, the same similar global shapes to that, you know, that of speed. But asking, despite the fact that they're soccer athletes, and not dismissing them, you know, just, oh, this is good enough, holding them to an extraordinarily high standard and not really allowing them to progress until they've given me what I wanted. So, yeah. You know, and then just keeping it very, very simple. So globally, you know, we want that posture. And then in regards to acceleration, I just try to keep it, you know, cause they're not track athletes. I want, you know, I always tell, you know, think of, you know, leaning and pushing while maintaining just a good body line. and you know, the force, and that's, you know, I'm always quick to kind of troubleshoot before they begin. Most soccer athletes spin their wheels, right? They want to first couple steps too quick, not enough force.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think, you know, so cues such as like strength, push, you know, much, you know, much more helpful for particularly larger groups. But again, not being afraid to really slow down the group and educate, you know, because inherently when someone's doing something, I think it's just an organic type thing. When an athlete is doing something that feels right, they never leave like, oh, well, I didn't get anything out of that. So I guess for maybe coaches out there listening who train large groups, and it does appear to be daunting experience now for, oh my goodness, like over a decade, and large chaotic sort of situations, you know, has kind of shown that don't be afraid to really slow down even more than what you think. The simpler you keep it, but the more mastery they can demonstrate over that simplicity, the better that session is going to be. And then it'll kind of, you can kind of find that, you know, that critical mass where everyone catches, and then you can kind of progress from there. But you got to be able to really peel it back so it catches like the entirety of the group.
Yeah. And you made a good point too before, like, they're not track athletes. Where do you find that middle ground? I did an episode on this. So this obviously won't be last week when this gets released, but last week as the day of we're speaking, I did an episode on just like, you know, don't be a perfectionist when it comes to things with team sport athletes. Like at the end of the day, when they're getting on the field, they're going to have other athletes around them that are going to impact how perfect they can truly be. But it's like, where do you, I had a hard time, you know, doing a good job of explaining where the line was. I just said that there was a line, and that, like,
right,
you want things to be at an adequate or above average level or a quality level, but let's not freak out over these things. And we have to also understand that there are more demands that these athletes need to face, and we have limited time and all that kind of stuff. But where do you think that line is when it comes to saying, like, okay, you know, these are team sport athletes, these aren't track athletes, but, like, you know, we just talked a little bit about acceleration, body angle, ground contact, pushing, right, you know, making sure that they are where you want them to be before you go on to that next level. And we're going to get into, right, top speed too, and talk about how it works with that as well. But like, where is that line in your mind of like, okay, we are, you know, making sure we're doing things the right way, but we're not freaking out over little things because we're not track athletes.
Right. So I think the important thing here is that my athletes first understand the rules of speed before they are allowed to break them in the game. So, you know, within the parameters of this is how it would work for a high end track athlete. I want to give you just enough of that, and then you do with it what you will during the game. And then just being, you know, aware of that, and then getting them, you know, as close to it, because, you know, the physics don't change. So we want, you know, and I want, you know, in regards to like speed development, obviously, I think that's the one thing I probably hang my hat on the most with the kids, just because we know as strength and conditioning coaches, it's going to not only, you know, maybe have the greatest benefit, maybe for a soccer athlete, but it's also going to expose them to the highest level of stress. So nothing's going to prepare nothing's going to prepare their soft tissue. No Nordic, no RDL, no back squat is going to prepare them for the same stresses as maximal sprinting.
Yeah.
So, you know,
that's a good point too. I sometimes look at it as like, the biggest single thing we're trying to get out of them overall in terms of priorities is increasing the rate in which they can attack the ground, not only the force of it, but the rate of, right, force and how powerful, right, they are, right, just in terms of the performance benefit of improving their overall speed and the reducing the injury likelihood because they're exposed to those type of things. In my mind, those are the number one and two reasons we're sprinting, yeah, with them. And those are also our number one and two goals for them as, in general, in terms of their speed. Is like, if they're getting faster, but like they're striking the ground at like 89% efficiency versus 100, whatever that is, like, okay, like, do I have to, yeah, go nuts over that? Or like, right, can I get their upper body a little bit stronger because they're really, really running well and they're fast? Like that, yeah, that's,
no,
the,
you know what I mean? Absolutely. That's it. And that's it. The best ability is is availability.
Yep.
First and foremost. And, you know, Hippocrates, right? First, do no harm, right? Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, what I've kind of seen is, okay, if we peel back everything and we just look from a 30,000 foot perspective, I have so many kids, right? And there's so many different ability levels too. I've got, you know, girls on the national team, and I've got kids that maybe just, you know, want to play at a D3 school. So that's, you know, a wide range. And then, you know, the professionals too within the club. So that's a wide range of ability levels. And when you peel it all back, like, so, you know, what is the lowest common denominator here? All right. You know, getting them faster, mm-hmm. right? And then obviously getting them stronger, but by the simplest means.
Yes.
Right. And then,
well, like, especially because you have a lot of them, like you have 10 athletes lining up to sprint at the same time. It's like, okay, let's not to cut you off here, but I struggle with this sometimes. Stressing yourself out about, like, oh my God, was every athlete of those 10 athletes just ran doing the exact most perfect thing, but right. then putting it in the back of your head, like, it's okay. Like, I'm having them sprint. They're getting faster just by that alone. Right.
Right. I absolutely. And then you just, it brings up the notion of intent.
Yes.
You know, you, right. And you know, when someone is giving maximal intent and they're bringing the necessary intensity in order to do so. And then again, I think experience, we've done it enough that, you know, if you really slow cook the process and, you know, you gently, and I found gentle nudges are much better than overt shoves in regards to the training process, particularly yep. with young athletes that adapt so fast. You know, that's what's incredible now. You know, actually, you know, allowing a little bit, and I know, don't want to skip ahead here, but with that, we'll say technology, right? I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit, but you know, seeing true loading schemes, a little bit really goes along a long way. And then just kind of stepping back and getting out of the way, you know, and just making sure that, you know, that quality is extraordinarily high. And they have to, that's on the coach to sell it. That is really on the coach to sell it. This is why this is important, back to the education. And then you have to sell the quality.
Yeah. Yeah, and nothing's better than telling them that doing something is going to make them faster on the field, and they're like, "Oh shit, I'm going to make sure I do that."
And here's why, and they need to understand in that moment, perhaps it's only a rep or two, and we actually know because of loading. If you're doing a maximal sprint, if you're doing fly tens, and a coach is telling me, my athletes did 6 fly tens," I'm going to say, "Well, BS, right? No, you know, those, you can cut off those last 4. You know, I've done these enough to know that they really have 2. And if they're feeling good, maybe they have, you know, 3 flies with, you know, like a 30 yard lead end with 5 or 6 minutes recovery. And that's their whole session, you know, with like a really, you know, extensive.
Yeah, that's a whole other part of it too. It's like, right. Okay, like, why do I have to understand that it's better for me to do a really, really intent, fast rep and rest a lot versus working till I can't move anymore? Like, okay, why is that more effective for me? Once they understand that, they don't want to go to that other side.
Right. Right. Well, and you know what? I got to give, Matt Madlin's, I'm sorry, I'm like butchering his name, his physical prep is agile periodization book, a lot of credit for kind of affirming what I intuitively was kind of, you know, feeling like there's so many confounding variables at any time. You know, I just kind of mentioned some of them, like ability levels and mm-hmm. and aspirations and things of that nature. And then you start getting into hydration, sleep. Are they stressed out over the test? Did they get into a fight with their parents? So truly, you know, on a year-round schedule with academy athletes, typically when we're not on, you know, COVID lockdown, they could be anywhere. So, you know, really just kind of microdosing and kind of just spot checking, you know, is it, you know, frequently, with high levels of intensity and moving on, is I've found kind of best practice, you know, so you can't really, I think, you can't really do a form of any sort of linear periodization with young kids. And I would almost, you know, push against that, even with seasoned pros, like, you know, a concurrent sort of conjugate type approach where you're kind of,
I tweeted about this the other day about how if you're sprinting and jumping, you're never really doing linear periodization or block right. style programming anyway. And everyone was right. like, what do you mean? It's like, I'm sorry. I tweeted against the standard thoughts a little bit. I right. hope that didn't offend anybody.
Not. You're right, because you should be doing a pure, you know, hypertrophy strength type block. And then it should progress to, we know the basics, power and rate of force. And then you start sprinting at the end, you don't touch weights. But how do you, like, you know, as you, you know, bleed into another quality and you start really getting into the meat and potatoes of said quality, you start to lose, you know, other qualities. And particularly, you know, you mentioned, you know, hockey and, you know, I know you like a lot of baseball guys too. Like you need to retain all of these qualities to some extent at all times. Now you can, again, you know, lean, you know, and that's all I do.
It's a sliding scale.
Correct. Right.
And okay, what time of year? What are their needs? What is their training age? Right. All these type of things. What are their goals? Like that will make you slide up and down the scale a little more. Right. But I don't ever think we're like totally off the scale in one direction. Like I can't say like, oh, these athletes aren't going to sprint for a month while we just touch weights. It's like I don't think there's a point in any time of. I can say this pretty confidently. I don't like to say black and white things, but this is something I can be pretty sure, certain about. I don't think there's a time of the year where I'd ever tell an athlete that I don't think it's important for them to sprint, just even in a low volume type way. Like the maximal speed diminishes so quickly. It's like, how can I look someone in the face and say, you're going to do strength only for a month? That's going to really have a negative impact on their speed. And it's like, if that's the case, then why would I ever not have that in there in some capacity?
Right. Exactly. In particular, like you just mentioned, training residuals. We know that, you know, max speed, if it's not trained every 5 to 7 days, we're losing it. We're losing that actual neural capacity, you know, to kind of, you know, move fast. So absolutely. But you'll just make little tweaks, like a little more strength at this time, a little more rate of force at this time, and a little more speed, you know, but that's it. You know, that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's what's needed, you know, what time of the year it is, and you make your little adjustments here or there. Staying a little bit into the topic of this, like the working with large numbers of athletes and like the acceleration and top speed stuff, like what do you find is the most successful way to get them into the positions that you want when you really can't micromanage and you have one athlete only to work with?
Approaching it from the standpoint that they are not track athletes, simple, you know, once they understand global positions, you know, like, and there's value in, you know, squatting and hinging, although they aren't obviously congruent to, you know, sprint positions, which requires you to stay tall and in a good body line. It's again, just being able to like, you know, you'd be surprised how many, even very good, you know, ball court athletes just lack really high levels of self-awareness and being able to like, you know, proprioception and like, you know, being able to put themselves in shapes. And I'm sure you've seen it too, where you're like, wow, like this is a, like an all state, like hooper and they can't do a hinge. Like they literally have no like posterior control at all. And you're like, huh, well, I guess that's sort of how it is. So beyond that wall sprint, like a simple wall sprint, like they get the idea then of, okay, all right, we want that lean. We want that push. Okay. Maintain your position, kids, and try to push the wall over. Right. And you know, when someone is, you know, obviously pushing versus it just pitter pattering. Right. And then you kind of let them go into like a falling progression. So now we remove the wall, right. Or a get up. The get up just intuitively puts them at a better angle where they're laying prone. They got to get up, maintain that line and, you know, push themselves out. And then just honestly, simple broad jumps, band resisted sprints, jump stretch bands, you know, Elite FTS, Rogue, whatever, you know, they're cheap. You throw them around their waist, they get it. Right.
Yeah.
And honestly, in place sprinting has done wonders with my athletes because, I've commented on this many times on I've sent out a bunch of tweets specifically on just this. Like, if you have them just do, you know, like simple ankling and, you know, a marches, a skips, you know, the full A progression, whatever, like the basics, right? You know, with a band tethered around their place, even standing vertically, they have to get their center of mass over their foot.
Yeah.
They can't. The band's going to pull them back, right, while they're moving. So they start to really feel what it's like to, you know, stand tall. And then we just work on ground striking. You know, I try to, the biggest thing with young athletes, and I'm sure you've seen it too, is they incorrectly believe that speed is moving your body as fast as humanly possible.
Yep.
Right. And it's not, they don't understand the concept of spatially. It's actually about striking the ground at the right time and, you know, being in the right position so as to propel yourself forward. So, you know, once they, you know, again, part of the job as a coach, once that, you know, as you're simultaneously educating and you're, you know, influencing, I'm always very quick to say ground striking, you know, this ground striking. I relate it for my soccer athletes to like ball striking. Like we always like, they're getting a million of thousands of touches on the ball every week, right? For control and getting better at it. And then they go, you know, for, you know, hitting a long ball or shaping it or curving it around the wall or getting it up over a wall. They have to shape it. It's the same way with speed, right? You have to strike the ground and, you know, you have to have a little more force at the beginning, those first couple of steps. And then then the ground contacts start to change as you get up to speed and they get faster and faster and faster. And you start to stand up and unfurl. But they start to, it starts to paint a little bit better of a picture and something that's a little more practical for them. So it's a good analogy when they start to think of it in terms of, you know, position and ground striking as opposed to, okay, let's just chaotically go as limbs as fast as possible, right?
Yeah, it makes them understand the efficiency of it and the quality needed in the movement. It's like, okay, like how I make contact is just as important as how fast, right, I'm making contact or the rate in which I'm doing it. And it's like, you know, once we get to the point where they understand the where they need to be with the contact, then it's like, okay, like let's put a lot of time into resisted sprints and regular sprints and even plyometrics to improve the rate of force, because now that rate of force is going to be utilized correctly because they are actually striking the ground and in the proper way with the proper positioning, and right, they understand what that is. Once you give them that basic understanding, you're going to actually be producing useful force and useful rate of force with the other stuff that you're doing. That's how I kind of look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's honestly with my soccer athletes, the simplest posture, balance, and rhythm drills. So yeah, we don't get too far into the weeds. It's just, but again, I'm going to ask them to do it at a very, very high level. So the A progression done extraordinarily well. March, skip for height, skip for distance, you know, A run. And let's start getting, you know, good at, you know, and there's great value for wickets for my soccer athletes.
Yeah. You know, I've seen you use them very well. I wanted to ask you a little bit about that too.
Yeah. So that's a go-to for my max velocity work, and you know, very timely. Carl Valley just put out, you know, an article that I retweeted the other day, and he, you know, was fantastic in his, well, it depends approach as to, you know, where you stand and function to, and you know, the functionality of wickets. You know, obviously, if they're a high-end track athlete and they're at LSU or Oregon or Texas, that may not be as necessary, although I think, you know, they still use them, you know, for warm-ups. But for my young athletes who are truly just understanding those global-type concepts, it is invaluable, you know, having them understand a fluid acceleration and, you know, gaining momentum and retaining it, you know, and you know, maintaining rhythm, you know, at high speed, because that's the one thing. That's one thing I really push back on the soccer community. And, you know, I've actually written about it for Simply Faster. And I that's why I love, you know, max velocity work so, so much, because it provides context to acceleration. My soccer athletes clearly accelerate all the time. They decelerate 10, 20 yards. That's 20 yards getting a little bit far, actually. You know,
yeah.
So, you know, they're quick and they're dynamic, but, you know, getting them up to max velocity provides greater context for improving their acceleration, because obviously you cannot obtain higher and higher velocities unless you're accelerating better. So it kind of retrofits and improves their acceleration, and it like the light bulb goes off once you let them get to 30, 40, 50 yards. You know, it's like, oh, I need to be a little more patient those initial couple steps. Hey, what you're saying all along about, you know, pushing more, I get it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's cool to kind of see that. And the soccer community, I think you get that a lot. You know, it's just accelerate, 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 accelerate. And you see COD, pre choreographed, you know, COD drills, and that's it. You know, and I'm like, whoa, hold on a second. What if we did this? But I've always kind of been like the guy that's, you know, and again, I kind of mentioned it before with, you know, things that are counterintuitive. I actually try to, you know, work on the weaknesses more so. And I've had great success with that. And I got to give a lot of credit to just, you know, West Side Barbell Book of Methods and, you know, years of just like Louis Simmons, like, working on bringing up an athlete's weaknesses. And then, you know, that really is so beneficial in allowing the athlete to even, you know, further progress their strengths. You know, so, you know, I try to be supplemental in a lot of, you know, a lot of points to what they're actually doing, you know, in the game or in a training session.
Yeah. I think, you know, the one thing you mentioned too, when it comes to like using wickets or resisted sprinting, and I think this is important when you look at it from like the perspective of what were you talking about with training a lot of athletes at the same time. It's like putting them in positions where the things that you want them to do in terms of their outcome of their movement will happen because of the situation, like the external restrictions or basically like, here's a goal. Like the wickets are here. If you have to land in a certain spot because of that, like you'll end up being where I want you to. You feel what that feels like. And now you can do more of that in our training versus me having to literally like, I can't pull one kid aside when I have 20 out there and be like, look at the video of what you just did. Do this, this, and this. Like, it's not practical. No, I can't do the same thing like with acceleration. But if I put a sled on an athlete or a band or whatever it is, I know they're going to have to drop their body angle into more of what I want. And they're going to have to strike the ground back under their hip, you know, or else they're going to fall straight over. If they're doing a hill sprint, they're going to have to get into the positions you want them to be in. Or again, they're going to fall straight in front of themselves. Like if they don't do the wickets the right way, they're going to literally kick them and trip on them and all this type of stuff. It's like how important that type of stuff is when you don't have the ability or the luxury to directly one-on-one coach somebody.
Right. No, 100%. And the beauty is and taking those super simple constraints, because that's all they are. They're just a series, like a band, a wicket, a hill. Like the most subtle constraint and getting exactly what you want out of it. I think there's an art to that, particularly with the large groups. And you honestly, between the wickets and the bands and a med ball, and I love your take on the hill as well too. And anytime I get but sometimes we get stuck in a flat area, so we don't have the opportunity. But if there is a hill, oh boy. That almost is like an obligatory acceleration type day.
Yeah, and I look at it the other way too sometimes. It's like if I have a remote athlete that can't get a sled or a band or whatever to do a resistant sprint, do you have a hill? Like it's like they work hand in hand. It's pretty crazy.
Absolutely. But I mean, beyond, I think we just comprised a nice little list of, you know, coaching large groups for, you know, in regards to speed for beginners, right?
Yeah. Can you put them in position? Like, can you understand that it's okay to be a little more general, because it's not practical to be super specific, because one, there's too many of them. Two, they're not track athletes, like we keep saying.
Right.
But at the same time, it's like, okay, there are things we need to get them to do to make sure that they're not going to get injured, that they're going to actually be able to utilize the strength and power we're building in our lifting and in our plyometrics and stuff like that. You know, can I get them on a wall? Can I get them to hold bands around each other's waist and put them in more advantageous positions? You know, can I have them do certain start types or different things that are going to get them to be in the movement or positions that I want them to be in, that where it's subconscious for them versus making them have to think about it so much? You know, are there times where I want them to think about it, so they understand like what they need to be doing and what they don't need to be doing? Like, that is kind of, in my mind, like the best way to go about it when you are dealing with large teams or any type of limitation you have that you cannot get really, really, really specific. Like, one athlete's easy enough to look and say, here's this video, I broke it down for you. You can't do that on the fly when you have 25 kids, right?
Like, no, absolutely not pragmatic, not practical. You got to do it.
They're going to hate it too.
Right.
Like, they would rather like be in a line of five doing a falling start sprint and like racing each other versus like getting one or two sprints in each practice because you're pulling each of them aside after one of their sprints with a video.
No one likes to be micromanaged. Yeah. No one likes to be micromanaged. Right.
You can in an individual setting, but it's like, how often does that happen?
Well, that's the thing. That's what it's kind of, you know, lent itself to, you know, so within the team context, nearly all of the academy does extra work with me in a private or semi-private setting. So, you know, that's where I kind of go more into the weeds and I meet them specifically, you know, where they need. So within the team, it is, let's keep this, you know, as simple as possible, for sure.
Yeah. Again, and that's the whole context of it. It's like, you know, even in terms of the skill of sport, it's like, okay, I have 20 athletes, like, maybe I'm going to be a little better served if I say, okay, well, let's take baseball for an example. Like, okay, 20 athletes are hitting and there's one coach. Try to hit the ball to the back of the net up at the top, or try to pull the ball this round.
Right,
we're going to try to pull the ball. Like, the coach watches all 20 athletes and he notices that 15 of them are having trouble with X, whatever thing it is. Like, they're pretty similar in terms of what they're struggling with. And he realizes that if they had the mindset of trying to pull the ball more, they might weed out some of the issues they're having. So the whole next round, he says, everyone has to pull the ball off the net in the cage, or else the next guy goes. Like, you only get to swing as many times as you pull the ball to the left side of the cage. And it gives them a competition, and it gives them a goal to reach for, and it's going to produce a good, most likely will produce pretty solid movement or better movement than the round before that. And it's like, I can do that with sprinting. I can have them race each other. It's going to ensure intent, but it's going to also ensure that when you're racing and your first goal is I have to win, all the other things, mechanically speaking, go out the back of your mind. Yeah. And now it's like, maybe I could cement some of these movements that we've been working on in a more unconscious type of mindset here, because now they're going to have to do it, because if it does get done, they're going to have to do it subconsciously because their main focus is on winning or doing whatever the goal is. So I think that has a place as well. I think that's
absolutely. Yeah. Yep. There's always value for that. And that's why I try to, you know, it's harder to do in the team setting, but, you know, within the always within the private and semi-private, I objectify within the training as much as possible. Just jump, free lap. You know, and then some of my, you know, more advanced athletes who've, you know, gotten through progressive overload, a little bit of velocity based. So everything is then quantified. So they're always, you know, objectifying progress. So.
Yeah, I think it's important like that. And this is why I really wanted to talk to you about this, because like, you are a person that does a lot of work with these teams. And I think it's a lost art, or not a lost art per se, but it's something that's not talked about as much, because we have all this technology, the video analysis, and in a vacuum, you can post something on Twitter and, you know, it strikes the average coach as like, these elite coaches are doing this with every single athlete that they have. Right. And I want, it's important to me to let the coaches know, the new coaches or the up and coming coaches, like, you know, hell, it's only been, you know, a little less than 5 years for me, but it's been a fast kind of like ascension. I'm lucky for that.
I want to
use my platform to have coaches like you who are successful say, it's okay. Like, you cannot possibly do that with 30 kids at your high school.
No,
like,
right.
You're doing a good job. Like, there's a lot of pressure. And then when you look even beyond that, then it's like, okay, well, then how do I do it? Right. So, like, here's someone like you who's had success, and I wanted to peel the layers of the onion back and let you explain how you have success getting these results when there's a lot of kids at the same time. And I think that's super important.
Right. Right. No, it's really important just to, you know, make sure that you stick as close to the fundamentals as possible, but really try to master those fundamentals. Cal Dietz said it, you know, let's not try to, you know, reinvent the wheel. Let's just keep making that wheel a little bit better. Right.
Yeah. And it's almost like that age old expression, like, don't be, you know, an inch deep and a mile wide. The mile wide being like, there's 15 different components you're trying to work on with your sprint, and you don't have any of them done really effectively. Right. Versus like, okay, I have good lean, I have good contact, you know, under or behind my hip and acceleration. Like,
yeah, let's go. Let me
get really good at those, and yeah, like, let's do it.
Exactly.
My arm is at 98 degrees. Okay, but like, you don't even do those other things that really, really well yet. So what are we doing here?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So in the same vein, obviously we're big, both of us, on plyos and sprints. And I really wanted to pick your brain a little bit on how you program and progress plyometrics. Obviously, I mean, this is a stupid rhetorical question. I shouldn't even ask you because we know the answer to it, but like, how, I'm going to ask it anyway. How important are plyometrics in an effective training program for the youth and advanced athlete?
Oh, it's huge, 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 huge. I think they're so just undervalued, particularly.
You think they're undervalued?
Low level extensive plyometrics, I think, should never, ever leave anyone's program, despite how advanced you become.
Yeah, that's a big statement. I like it.
And I will hang my hat on that, because I've always, you know, NFL preseason is going to be rolling around here, hopefully, right? I mean,
fingers crossed.
On August 11th, right?
I think when this episode goes out, we will know, and we're going to be wishfully thinking, or chaos will strike. So hopefully,
Goodell has led us to believe that everything is all good right now. So
when you have ambition and money, you can make a lot of things happen, right?
Right. It's a wonderful thing, right? No, but you see it. But my point was, you see what? Non-contact Achilles. You see, you know, ACLs too. And then you look at them catching bricks on a Bosu ball, and you start to
obviously. Are you trying to get me fired up? I don't know.
Right. And you're like, Well, you know what, that really strong, you know, I'd imagine, you know, GPP based program where they were sprinting and leaping and squatting heavy, preparing for the combine at Alabama or Clemson, or, you know, at Oklahoma, or, you know, Penn State, or, you know, my school. I'm a North Carolina Tar Heel guy. I can't throw them out for football though. Although Mac Brown is getting them headed in the right direction, but I digress. Right. That steady diet of DPP GPP that prepared them and made them monsters for the combine, you know, after they're, you know, a fourth, fifth year vet, they're not doing it anymore. Then they show up, and then they're kind of predisposed to kind of what happens, and their soft tissues aren't prepared.
And that's
prepared.
A big thing. People don't realize, like, not only are we saying it's not, you know, you don't need to do that stuff, and it's not doing what you think it does, that stuff being the Bosu ball balancing and the crazy drills like that, it's actually detrimental. Like you mentioned, tissue preparation. It's like, you can really decondition the tendons and ligaments to you know, the moving surface, versus when you get out on a non-moving surface, the entire relationship between force exerted and the force produced and the rate in which it's produced is totally different. So you're getting shell shocked now because you spent 2 months doing something else.
High degrees of specificity are both a blessing and a curse. Yes. You need to know when to hit that NOS button.
You also need to know what the hell they are. Like,
you need
to know you're hitting the NOS button and not the emergency brake while you're driving like that.
Right. And I may be being kind by saying that they are, in fact, specific. But let's just say they are trying to.
Devil's advocate. Like, in their mind, they think they're being specific.
Right.
But not only is it like the specific is wrong, but it's like you have the wrong mindset of when you're even. Let's say for our devil's argument's sake here, it was actually good what they were doing.
Right.
You right. shouldn't still. You should still. Shouldn't be doing it all the time.
No, like, absolutely not. That puts the athlete in extreme peril, because now they're moving away from the foundation and the base, and the things that will keep them healthy and resilient to injury. There's always, and like we mentioned prior, you know, in the episode here, we never truly remove one element. We maybe lean one way or the other, but you never truly remove strength or rate of force, or, you know, maximal all out speed, right? They all elements always remain. And if you, God bless you, if you are willing to remove one altogether for an extended period of time, be willing to deal with the consequences. I mean, that's your call, but, you know, there may be buyer's remorse.
Yeah. Well, you even look at a guy like Jason Spray, like, shout out to him, because yeah, I have to say, yeah.
He's
I have
a big,
to
he's
say
a, he's a big he's a big Buccos fan. I know that. I love the videos of his little dude training, and he's always in that Clemente jersey too. So
very cool.
Shout out to him as well, right?
he works with half the Titans at this point, but it started out with Kevin Byard, and you look at a guy, when I tell you, and I really, you know, knocking on wood here, but like, I'm hoping I'm not, this isn't a jinx when I say this, but he is year in and year out, he's healthy, he's performing, and right. You look at what they are doing, they are doing a lot of GPP work early in the offseason, they're doing extensive plyos, they're doing strength training, eccentrics, he's on the field, you know, putting his foot into the ground and pushing and exerting force and, you know, decelerating, accelerating, but it builds up. It goes from more of a GPP, like very linear, you know, build the max output sense, to more of like the field work type stuff. And that's a guy that is doing basics, and that is producing healthy players year in and year out. Like, they're not having ankle injuries, knee injuries. Like, you see a guy like Alvin Kamara, who is just a sick athlete, and they're doing this stuff. And I mean, it's hard to think it's a coincidence that, like, he was riddled with knee and ankle injuries last year. Like, all he did for the entire offseason was wobble on something and then has to go in. He has to then go in and play and put his foot into the ground that when it's stable and exert a lot of force. And that's the other thing, too. When you're dealing with an athlete of that level, odds are, like, even with diminishing returns, they're always going to have a very elite level of force production, rate of force production, and all that type of stuff. Even if it, you know, diminishes 5 or 10%, it's still in the 95th percentile. And it's like, if you don't have them exert that stuff, like, if they don't have to, if their engine isn't pushing against their body at certain points of the offseason doing things that are on a stable surface that they would do in a game, and you remove that from them, they're going to go into the season and the engine's going to still work at a really high level. And now the chassis and the wheels and the suspension are nowhere near ready to handle it. And then that's where the injuries come up.
Yeah. 100%.
You know what I'm saying?
You saw that more recently with the return to play after the lockdowns. The German Bundesliga was really the first league to kind of get started again. And you saw that very first weekend, a lot of soft tissue injuries, just because, you know, the players were running around sub-max levels in tennis shoes. And then when they spike up and they reach for, you know, 100% in the game, it's not there.
And so, it's like, you didn't have to be doing it. We're not saying you had to be hitting it the ground running or go, you know, balls to the wall the first 2 weeks. You got to get there eventually.
Right. You need just enough. And I like the word microdose, here and there, just to keep your athletes honest.
Yeah. And it's like, I can utilize extensive plyometrics, and they could be mostly of all the plyometrics I'm doing early in the off season, and then they can still be utilized later on, but now they're a prep for the intensive work I'm doing in the same session.
Yeah,
there's that mindset, right?
Absolutely, you can't training in any sort of sense, regardless of what they're training for, is just, you know, I liken it to just kind of exposing them to higher and higher levels of just stress. And you always have to have them prepared for that next level. If you're skipping steps, then that's just wildly dangerous. And there's just a little bit of common sense there too. Like, if they're doing like altitude landings, you start them off, you know, like 12 inches and then you build them to 18 or 24. And then, you know, like you slowly kind of just work that up and, you know, just, you know, making sure that they're, you know, doing, you know, checking off the appropriate boxes before they're moving on to the next level and just a very kind of common sense type way.
Yeah. I think eventually, you know, people will begin to realize when they see these athletes doing these things. I mean, people like us realize it, but the average person's going to know like a couple things. One, don't assume that the level of the athlete is due to the training all the time.
Right.
The second thing is though, like see how that athlete is prepared when they get back to playing and kind of like try to connect the dots of like what they did or didn't do and what the result was and make your own informed decision. But I think it's like continually important for people like us to keep saying things like this so that people are realizing it and they are understanding what needs to be done and what really is a waste of time or what is productive and you know, what the progression really should be to produce, you know, a product on the field
that
leaves us in the best position to perform and also reduce injury.
Right. Yep. 100%.
Yeah. All right. So speaking, and this is, I promise you, I did not intend for this to happen this way, but this is a really good segue. Talking a couple of tweets that I had from you that I wanted to get to before we finished up, but I unfortunately could not find the video that went with this, but I don't think it's too important because the topic is really what I wanted to get to. But basically, you had put a video up and were saying how it's a fantastic illustration of dynamic correspondence, joint angles, velocities becoming increasingly more specific to rigors of sport. This is for the elite level athlete with strong general preparedness foundation, preparing for peak in competition. So I liked the idea that the exercise was more standard and simple, but you explain how it did have that illustration of the dynamic correspondence and things
I remember that specific tweet, and I actually retweeted with a comment on William. So he was actually preparing that his female MMA fighter for competition in Vegas.
Okay.
And he had a brilliant progression from a closed chain, like rotational, like axe chop. And then it opens up and he has like a banded, like overspeed one. And then he has like a medicine ball throw. It was like a drop jump plyo with like a medicine ball throw and the chain opens. It was brilliant. Yeah. Right. You could see the, you know, very clearly in a very simple way, you know, the evolution of, you know, reducing load and increasing velocity while staying joint angle specific. It was fantastic. I mean, it was so good. And again, it's, that would be the time to hit said NOS button. Like we were talking about, you know, like a couple weeks out, you got to know your athlete there. You know, some people have longer delayed transformations, you know, in terms of like peaking and stuff, that's kind of just knowing the athlete. You know, like leading right into a competition, it was just really, really well done. And it was super simple and it kind of just leapt out to me and I had to give him a shout out.
Yeah. And then that just goes to show you though, like redefining what the average person thinks is sports specificity. And it's like the planes of motion being used, the rate of force, the region, like something just as simple as, you know, in week one of a program, it's more of like slower movements with max force production, shifting to faster movements with, you know, more of an emphasis on rate of force. Like that bridge, that bridged the gap, right?
The speed would increase and let's say the range of motion would perhaps decrease, you know, to become more confined to the actual range demonstrated.
That is sport specificity, not like making your athlete let's just add a football to this exercise. There you go.
No, that's it. Exactly. That's again, obviously, it's always gonna be that nice little parlor trick that, you know, that's gonna get the retweet by SportsCenter. But, you know, again, like you said, it's kind of our job just to, you know, provide information and put it out there in the ethos so that people can do with it what they will.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, and that again is like, I'm going to just say it straight up now. If you have never looked at the principle of dynamic correspondence from Yuri Verkhachansky, go cheap plug for Yuri, even though he's not alive anymore.
Right.
You know,
well, go, his
daughter's doing some great stuff.
Yeah, Natalia. Yeah.
She has one of the best PowerPoint presentations that I think exists in sports performance and strength training today. So go check that out. Just literally look up Natalia Verkhachansky, shock training, shock method, jump training, whatever. It'll be like it's a free PDF that you can literally go through. It's fantastic. It takes a lot of stuff from Yuri, and she puts it in her own words, and she does a lot of good stuff. So check that out.
No, it's
and go read the dynamic of principal dynamic correspondence if you truly want to understand what sports specificity is. I think it's important.
Yeah, very. I 100% agree with that sentiment. So make sure to check that out.
Yeah. All right. So the last one that I wanted to get to, change of direction versus agility. And you basically were like, change of direction equals predetermine, agility equals react, change of direction, progress to agility, both can coexist. So I thought this was a cool way to look at it. And I've always looked at it as like, change of direction is something that's happening during agility, but you can't just look at the physiological components of, you know, how your foot strikes the ground and how it decelerates your body and how it reproduces force in another direction without looking at what decisions are being made to prompt that movement. Right. And they kind of both come together.
Right. No, and I have a unique perspective because, again, like, you know, working with, you know, the pros at our club and the youth, you know, I see both ends. Right. And in 160 characters on Twitter, it's very easy to vilify one or the other. Right. But at a very young age, you know, having solid understanding of change of direction is a great foundation for which to build agility on, where you start layering in, you know, perception and reaction and a moving, you know, changing atmosphere, climate scenario, whatever, right? So they both can, you know, coexist together. So I don't want to completely vilify one or the other. As the athlete becomes more advanced, you want, you know, I would say more agility work where they're responding to external stimulus, right, within, you know, the drill. But at a young age, it's important that they understand, again, and like I mentioned with the speed, first understanding the rules. So then they can do with them what they will as they, you know, as when they're out there playing, competing, training.
Yeah, I think that's important, too. Like this has been a common theme of what we talked about today. But, you know, knowing the rules so that you can do with them what you need, like having that understanding, I think is one of the most important things we can give as a coach.
Yep. And I'm really big on that. Like, if I had one flaw, is probably I do have a tendency to talk maybe too much, but the kids really understand what I'm trying to get across. I will say that they get it, and I get what I need to get out of them. So that's particularly the important thing with the young kids. I'd rather see them do less reps right than more reps wrong for the sake of just, you know, doing more reps.
Yeah. Yep. And again, it goes into like giving them the tools to have that BS meter, giving regular people the tools to have that BS meter, like pushing the industry forward in that sense, I think it is really important. And I would say probably one of the main themes, it wasn't really intended to be, but what we talked about today is like, that's how we're going to continue to push the industry forward. That's how we're going to continue to push our athletes forward. And I don't really see a reason that things couldn't continue to get better in what we do if that just keeps on happening.
Right. And 100% with that.
Yeah. So, all right. Kind of giving you a second to have some closing thoughts. If there was anything that you particularly wanted to touch on that we didn't get to, you know, I always like to kind of do this, hopefully not putting you on the spot too much, but I wanted to just give you a chance to hit on anything that you wanted to, or to leave us with some parting thoughts before we wrap up, if you had any.
No, Jerry, I just appreciate you honestly having me on. I really am passionate about, you know, mastering my craft in every way possible. So I, you know, like talking shop with, you know, like-minded individuals. So anytime I get the opportunity to do that, and then, you know, I just hope that, and I obviously know you have your podcast is fantastic and very successful, that this helps.
Thank you.
Right. That whoever, right, whoever's listening, they find this
I know they will.
Podcast, you very, very useful. And I guess maybe the last thing is, you know, check out at Houndspeed Twitter. That's it. I try to put up, you know, good content and retweet good content and you know thought provoking type things, you know, as frequently as possible, and you know, have a little bit of fun with it too, and you know, and that's pretty much about it.
Yeah, no, I listen, if there's anything you're going to do after this episode is over and you're done listening to it, is you're going to go follow Mike on Twitter. Give us your ad again just to make sure they have it.
It is at Houndspeed, all one word.
Cool. Go follow him. You know, great stuff, great content coming out. More actually insight on the things we were talking about in the conversation today of what he's doing with these larger teams and, you know, some of his own programming and his own workouts, things like that. So check that out. Go follow or go find the Pitch Bowl Dynamic Correspondence and read it. And find that PDF from Natalia Verkhoshansky if you are interested in some of the stuff we talked about. So those are your three things to do for homework. Mike, thank you again for taking the time to come on. This was great. And I like you said, I have no doubt that, you know, my listeners are going to get a lot of benefit from it. So thank you for taking time to come on and talk shop. I appreciate it.
I love it. Thank you, Jay.
You got it.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Muscles and Management Podcast brought to you by Challenger Strength. I'm your host, Jared DiFilippo, signing off on the show that's changing the way we view training, sports performance, and business.